Tonal Better podcast episode 31. We're returning. This is going to be the hardest episode to follow up ever.
Yay, 31, brought to you by influenza. Influenza, the disease you want to catch.
I'm in a room with two diseased people. This is fantastic.
That's right. So that's Jeff, the freaking Pope.
That's right. Thank you, Jeff, for coming along.
Yeah, second episode in a row,
We don't do weekly
amazing anymore.
No, too
no
much.
No one cares enough. We just we come to you when we're ready.
Thank you very much for having me again.
But Jeff was the amazing facilitator of our last episode, the VR episode.
He sure was, TV Dave.
And to all our prospective property developers in the audience, who should they go to again, Jeff?
Yeah, actually, you should come and see us at Frost Collective. We do some very amazing VR walkthroughs.
Lovely. Go and do that, all you property developers who aren't locked up next to Eddie Obeid.
We are not being paid directly by
not yet.
Collective.
We're open to get paid.
Podcast.
Yeah.
But that was very nice of them to let us come along and use the space for that and the facilities.
It was great having you guys.
It was good fun.
It was good.
We drank a lot of drinks between us.
Beverages,
all.
Yes.
That's there was right.
Lots of beverages.
Lots of water and apple juice, yeah.
Heaps of water.
Hopefully it didn't take you too long to clean up 3, 4 a.m. or so before you got away, minimum.
It was actually pretty quick. We just kind of just dragged it all to the end of the table and threw it in a bin.
Yeah. Gotcha. We were there until about 10 o'clock or something.
It was fairly late.
Yeah, it was like 6 to 8 or 10. It was a good session and everyone got to go on the... So listeners, if you haven't listened, our last episode was a VR spectacular... and we all had a go of a bunch of HTC Vive enabled games and got everyone's reactions as they kind of before and after used it, as well as talking a bunch of other crap like we always do.
That's right. And I guess there's one thing I like to add that I wasn't sane enough to elucidate on the night was that probably playing that golf game at the end, I was actually more interested in interacting with the physics objects rather than the golf game itself. I would have spent half an hour trying to throw a club up in the air and catch it again if you guys hadn't pulled me off.
What I was trying to do initially. Like that was I'd seen it done in a YouTube video where he flicked the club up, spun it around, and caught it again.
Yep.
And I just straight out went for it. And there is actually an art to it. So
it was the first thing I tried to do as well, even though I'd seen everyone else do it and was like, why do they always do that? Like, why are they just throwing stuff? And then I picked up a club out of my golf bag and went, I'm just going to throw it over there.
Yeah. And it was amazing. Like the physics is just amazing. And the only thing that kind of got me with those games was actually adjusting the settings within the game.
Yes. Confusing.
And the feedback from everyone else that I'd sort of spoken to about it, like actually adjusting settings while you're playing VR is actually a problem. The idea being that a lot of people are saying now that the settings for the VR, like the actual video settings, sound
like
settings.
The interface for the settings?
Yeah. Should be actually taken out of VR and have it as a control panel on your laptop or something that you can actually tweak it there rather than inside the application.
Definitely. Needs to be or either that or you bring it up in world, like on a tablet in world.
Yeah.
And you look at it on a tablet and be like, oh, sweet, I'll slide that one up and, you know.
Yeah, it's... A lot of people are having trouble actually, A, finding them and B, adjusting them.
Ah, right.
Especially with sliders and stuff where you're having to hold.
Hold a button.
Your remote and actually drag it up and down.
Point it's at something of, and then like release the trigger to actually select, like make it happen. And
so something like even like a the Catalyst Control Center, say for a bad example, that sits in between the monitor hardware and the game itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something like that.
Or just that the game has to be aware that it's being displayed on Vive and only display the settings options, like on the.
Oh, as opposed to having to take off the headset, go to your laptop, change this, put the headset on.
Well, you'd still have to take the headset up
to
see the settings, but you just wouldn't be trying to do it in game. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Although arguably like you'd want to see the result of it in game while the settings are being changed.
Yeah, because usually it does come up on your screen when you're actually changing them anyway. So you can actually see it happening in real time.
Well, the solution to that would be something that Microsoft has done at least in one game that I know of in their Play Anywhere stuff on PC is that there's a setting in, or there was when I tried Forza 6 Apex or something. It was like a free version of Forza on the Windows Store, the only thing I've ever tried. And it had a setting where, or the default was, it would scale the rendering in real time. So if there was less resources, it would actually just scale down the graphics options for like a few frames Right. Like it was like doing it on the fly to make sure you got 60 hertz, like as its baseline.
That sounds more performant, the CPU intensive, than actually just setting a level and sticking with it.
I agree, but it worked fantastically. Like I never felt like there was any lag whatsoever, and it just was, the image was like kind of perfect looking the whole time, and I didn't even notice if it did drop it like or not.
Well, perhaps I need to play it on my dodgy computer and then I'll actually see the difference.
Right, and so, I mean, that kind of thing would be cool, right? Like if you need to hit 90 hertz and and whatever in the resolution of your thing, if your computer can just on the fly adjust to the best possible. But then settings that to do with like preference, though, would still have to be dealt with.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point of it, is that a lot of people, hey, can't find it because, you know, you're in this 3D world and you're kind of looking around trying to find where the, if there's like a question mark or a options cog or a settings cog, if it was actually taken out of that space and it was quite obvious, like when you either A, fired up the game, that it was like a big settings button that you could hit, or it opened as actually a second window to the game that you could actually just tweak it with the mouse.
Or if you went into settings world and like everything was just like something you could grab.
Everything's
and
a
pull.
Slider.
Yeah.
It's like up and down.
Or if you're in like a control room, then you could be like all switches and stuff. And
levers
and push
things. A full mixing panel, you're saying.
Yeah. That's
you,
right.
You just want a virtual mixing panel to sit in front of, don't
that
you?
That would actually be fucking awesome if we're like, you know, say we're using Reaper to record here. If you could actually just have like a virtual analog mixing desk.
Like a
with your headset
Neve.
On. Yeah, a virtual Neve console to do the podcast now.
Got a 64-channel virtual Neve.
Time to start a Kickstarter for that, Steve, I think. You know, just imagine mixing your favourite band.
I could probably just develop it myself.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
But yes, if someone could pay me for it.
Even better.
Copyright, 27
years. Yeah, well, sorry. Hey, virtual Abbey Road Studios.
Yeah.
Yeah, like just think of that. That's a way to go.
Well, since last week, have you guys thought of anything like in there? You know, now I know you already had, Jeff, and we all have kind of tried them in different parts. But did that impact how you think about what games will be successful or popular in the future, or just applications for it for the VR?
The one that I was kind of thinking that would be amazing would be like a submarine type game where you basically become the captain of the submarine, and you've got your virtual. Reality sort of headset on, and you can sort of click from console to console and, you know, look through the periscope and talk tactics and things like that. I think that would be really interesting to do in, because it's a closed environment. You're not really seeing much horizon, but there's plenty of knobs and switches and things to turn on and off.
Actually do. Yeah.
It's sort of like Silent Hunters 3 and 4 and 5 when you can actually click on a station and then interact with the station.
Yeah, very much so.
As opposed to, I think we mentioned it on the podcast, Starfleet Commander, the came out of a game jam where you can be one of the five members of the Enterprise's bridge crew and need to work with your team to run the Enterprise.
It would work exactly the same as that.
Yeah, very similar, but yeah.
I, like, a year or two ago, my brain kind of went to the amalgamation of live streaming from people's phones, i.e. like Periscope or Facebook, you know, all that kind of stuff where people are now, like, streaming everything around the world live, to, like, experiencing that virtually. So, like, you know, if you've got your headset on and someone's streaming in 3D, you know,
with two cameras, say.
Well, some phones have 3D cameras on them. So, you know, taking that logical step further, that you could then see this 3D environment, you know, from whoever around the world streaming and flick channels, like, you know, like flick across, like you're flicking across some sort of news feed and choosing what experience to see. And, you know, oh, look, I'm hiking through some forest in southern Germany. And, oh, look, I'm in at the Arctic. And
oh, I'm watching Radiohead at Coachella.
I'm about to murder someone.
I'm about to have a car accident. Three, two, one.
This week, which is very sad.
Which is why we should ban Facebook. We should, where was Facebook radicalized?
Yeah, well, that's a whole different topic.
Podcast,
but
yes,
yeah, I'm not even on Facebook.
Which is probably
anymore.
A 2GB topic.
So if you were following the podcast on Facebook, you may have seen me say that I promise and vow to keep the Facebook updated and then no longer updated after that. Sorry about that, but sometimes I lie.
Well, and sometimes you're supposed to give the password to me or someone else.
That's right. That was also a thing.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Ah, well, I'll forgive you.
That's a pretty successful event though, right? Like, you know, like we got lots of the crew in. So I wanted to quick shout out though to our Discord, which is kind of our where our little community around this podcast is all. So if you consider yourself a listener or someone around who, you know, listens to the podcast and likes the podcast, maybe, you know, it might be going a bit too far, actually liking it. But get involved with the Discord. There's a link in the show notes there. And you can just join in. You don't have to do anything. You can just chat. You can just read our chats. You can, you know, post about things you like. We have separate channels to talk about all sorts of games, whatever people are talking about. If it's popular, put it in its own little channel. Voice channels.
That's right. And I mean, for example, the Game Deals. I love the Game Deals channel. It's great.
Game Deals channel is great. Yep. There's just everyone scouring the internet for the best deals or things they want to promote that are good and chucking it in there. Yeah. So come and join us. That'd be awesome.
That's right.
And thanks to everyone who has recently joined, because we had a bit of an influx, didn't we, Dave?
As it turns out, I have to invite all my friends onto there. Oh my God, I have to invite everyone I know.
Well,
and it's good.
I'd already invited everyone I know. That was you. and then eventually I invited Jeff. You know,
yeah,
And
it's exploded from there.
Dusty and I've you know, that's been good. We've got a couple of dozen people in there, I think. So it's pretty nice.
Well, we're starting to get a broader range of games, not
broader
just
range
Dirty
of games,
Bomb.
Broader range of chat. It's a bit of a destination now for
it's where the cool kids hang out.
Finding people, yeah. So yeah, it's nice. I'm really enjoying it. It's something I've like kind of always wished. There was, you know, like you always had your friends on some platform and we can all connect to a party. I can't connect.
Download Skype, download Blizzard, download Mumble, download Hamachi, download this.
We've gone through that whole thing now, and then now Discord seems to, which is essentially just IRC chat with voice chat thrown in the mix. It's solved kind of all the problems.
Yeah, I think it's, as far as a voice platform goes, it's amazing. It's much, much better than Skype, I think, for gaming.
Yeah.
It's uses a lot less bandwidth anyway.
Uses a lot less bandwidth. And actually, the tech behind Skype, the I know this is boring, but the audio
compression
algorithm is actually, I think it's called Orpheus or something like that. I can't remember now. It's a higher grade version of that Discord uses than what Skype was actually using.
Makes sense, because the thing that I noticed was that how little bandwidth it used, considering that I can hear you guys perfectly generally.
Yep.
Occasional fade out or something, but
yeah, sometimes it like chokes if your uploads are like a bit shit. Like I know a couple of our users don't have great upload speeds, and so they'll be talking and then you can hear the kind of like it just drops off because their uploads, you know, aren't keeping up with the amount it needs to push. Not that it's much, it's just the concurrency of it. But yeah, it does well. It's a good app. Really like Discord.
Hop on Discord, everyone, even if I'm just guilting you into it.
Yeah, that's right. TV Dave says so.
That's right. You have to, otherwise I'll feel sad. It's and you don't want me to feel sad, because then I might go on a murderous rampage.
That's right. You heard it here first. It'll be live streamed on
Facebook.
That's right.
Well, if I get enough up speed.
Up speed.
Not a Malcolm's NBN, I won't.
Yeah, that's right. We can't do things like that here in Australia, luckily.
No. I'll stream it in 2019 when I get my fiber to the node.
Be like, I got to film this murder and then go home and upload it.
That's
it's going to take a while.
Yeah. I actually got an email from Telstra telling me that my cable service now is eligible to be upgraded to the NBN.
Nice.
That your cable is going to be upgraded to the NBN. So you're going to get exactly the same connection for more price.
This happened to one of my other friends too.
Yeah, and I'm not going to take them up on their offer, I think. even though the backhaul from my area into the backbone is very, very crap, but I'm still not going to do it.
Based just on out of spite, against the plan?
It's not any cheaper. You do get a bit more bandwidth, supposedly.
Yeah.
But I'm not even actually getting the bandwidth that I want now. And everyone that I've talked to that do have the NBN aren't really getting the bandwidth that they should be getting either. So
right. Yeah, same deal as with the ADSL, where everyone's getting or supposedly has to have a baseline upload and download, but gets only a fifth of that.
Yeah, right, if you're sometimes. Lucky. Unless you try to sort of log on at about sort of 4 o'clock in the morning, you might get that kind of speeds. But it's very few, like it's very far between for me. Pretty much anything after about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on any day, I'm lucky to sort of get sort of 400K down, and I'm supposed to be getting sort of 3 meg down. So
yeah, My up is capped at 0.8 megabits.
Well, you're still doing better than I am. But I've got a couple of people who are fibre to the premises, and I suppose with premises you can sort of guarantee what they're getting, whereas obviously with cable or node-based stuff, you're kind of variable based on your quality of your connection there. I'd say the key is to complain, but I don't know with the other connections that aren't premises connections.
Well, I could put this in perspective. I was listening to a podcast within the last few days with Americans in San Francisco talking about their speeds being shit.
Right.
Because they're only getting 50 up, 50 megabits up only. When they should be getting 100.
Oh,
or,
no.
You know, it might drop to 25 at night. You're like, what? Like, oh yeah, at work it's 300 down and 100 up. So you get used to that. Well, no shit. But like, by the way, the rest of the world, like, yeah. we doesn't have.
We
that.
Do rank down to the bottom somewhere in internet connections.
We're dropping fast, and that's just. I mean, our listeners already probably know all this, so it's preaching to the converted. But
we're really enjoying talking about it, though.
We're so far behind; it's insane. So anyway,
hashtag thanks, Malcolm.
You know, speaking of government decisions that affect gamers, and it's not. You know, Pauline Hanson was pretty upset. A while back.
Oh, that's right, about Australian gamers. That's right.
Yeah, Australian kids in the bush getting beaten by
Koreans.
Overseas players.
Yeah.
Let's not put labels on them.
It's going to be Koreans. You
know, yeah. Yeah, well, it was something to do with StarCraft, wasn't it?
No, it might have just been in general.
Well, yeah. In general. So, you know, why not bring in GST into the Steam store?
Well, so this it's just an advance warning.
I'm actually for this, but... Yep.
So just an advance warning, this will be happening in 2 months' time. So everyone get ready to go to your alternate sites and your smaller sites who will be able to get around it.
Yeah, July 1st, I think.
Yeah, so get ready to hear a whole bunch of stories in the news where eBay have threatened not to ship to Australia. Is that right, Jeff?
Yeah, I believe that it's one of two things, is that they are talking about if you aren't an Australian registered business, you wouldn't be able to use the Australian eBay site because... they need to collect GST from you.
Yep.
And the other one was that they wouldn't let you purchase from Australia on any of the international sites.
What? No way.
Yeah. So, and eBay and Amazon, who are, you know, I pretty much do most of my purchases through Amazon or through eBay. And I'm probably not alone in this. I'm not sure how far it's going to go. Like, will we, if they say no, where does it go from here?
How does that even work? Because eBay's whole thing is showing you like deals that, we didn't find anything in Australia, but here's some international ones that you could order from. You know, here's a Chinese one, one's from the US. Like, all that disappeared, that'd be pretty small.
It's a restriction of competition. That's what it is. Like, the retailers in Australia are very, very nervous about Amazon coming out.
Which is happening like early next year, right? Like they're already here setting up.
They're opening up a warehouse here.
Mm. Yeah, they've already started hiring people left, right and centre.
Yeah, hundreds of them.
Yeah, if you follow Amazon on LinkedIn, especially Amazon Australia now, there's jobs going left, right and centre for some serious tech actually.
Yeah, lots of tech, a few management positions I think and some sort of kind of grunt work stuff, but most of it was in the tech side, the IT stuff.
Your Jerry Harveys of the world are absolutely freaking out about it because they buy in such bulk. Manufacturers are going to preference Amazon over anyone else. If Amazon says, I want 1 million of these, they're going to get 1 million of them and sell 1 million of them.
And people are going to preference Amazon for purchasing because A, easier, B, cheaper.
And especially now with like IoT coming into it, like IoT for Amazon hasn't been released in Australia yet. But as soon as Amazon set up shop here, you'll be able to get IoT buttons.
Like you'll be able to use your Alexa to order things, that kind of thing.
So for the uninitiated, Jeff's meaning like things like your fridge, being able to order stuff straight from your fridge when it's out of stock of something and have it arrive on your doorstep the next morning.
Yeah, that's correct. Like basically there's these little IoT buttons which work by Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. You press the button and it immediately gets added to your shopping cart. And then later on that night you can check it out, or if you want to, you can actually press it and it will automatically be ordered and dispatched, which means that if you need laundry detergent, you press the laundry detergent button, it's immediately added to your cart, checked out, and it's in the mail and should be at your door tomorrow.
Yep. And they're promising, I think, some same-day stuff as well. So you could order in the morning before like 9:30 or 10 o'clock or something like that. It could be to you by 6 p.m. or something like that, I think was the deal.
Yeah, it's insane.
So, yeah, you're like, oh, shit, I forgot tonight dinner when you get to work in the morning, and then just order it and get home and it's knock on your door.
But you'd have to go home to press your button to order dinner and then go back to work, right?
No, I'm saying you could do stuff like order online or from your phone on the bus on the way into work and then have it for you when you get home.
Or you could just order it on your phone in the bus.
Well, anyway. The point is that everything, like, this stuff is kind of like already exists around the world in different countries, right? Like you have this sort of this capability in places where there's a larger infrastructure and lots more people.
It's Uber, but for food.
Yeah, well, there is Uber Eats as well, which is Uber food.
That's all right. I'm just trying to make lame jokes.
It's not working.
Don't help me.
But you know, what does it mean for Australian bricks and mortar like retailers and stuff? Well, they're gonna die. Like, it's just gonna happen.
And if we can start with Harvey Norman, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, everyone's here. When does he die? Yeah, I don't know.
Soon, hopefully.
We already saw Dick Smith go, so it's not gonna be that big a deal.
Getting back to the Steam store charging GST.
Yes,
I'm kind of wondering how much that's actually going to affect pricing, or will Steam drop their prices to American style pricing? Just
and
to
then
piss off
GST on.
Yeah, or just to piss off the Australian retailer market. Because if you think about it, if suddenly it gets out there that Steam is like 10% cheaper than everywhere else, man, like you're looking at an EB Games going broke pretty quickly.
Well, we had this discussion, I think, earlier last year, and that Steam prices in Australia are charging US dollars, where in Steam in New Zealand are charging New Zealand dollars.
Correct.
So the question is then whether Steam goes to Australian dollars with GST, or Steam stays with USD but adds on 10% GST, or some iteration involving those outcomes. And I mean, there was obviously part of the court case which said which Steam aren't an entity in Australia because they don't sell anything physical.
That's right, which is why you couldn't buy Steam controllers locally from Steam. And still, it's like via some sort of grey market export deal with EB Games to get the Steam stuff in store.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeff, I cut you off before.
Yeah, I was just thinking that eventually the PC side of EB Games is just going to disappear completely.
It has already pretty much.
It already did a while ago. Yeah, I remember Mike saying that.
One shelf because I went in there the other day and I'm trying to guilt Steve into buying something, and it was, just literally one shelf. One and a half shelves with half of it being empty, coming soon boxes.
Well, I think last time we talked about it, it was that you can go into eBay and you can buy something that's only like 5% more expensive than what it turns out to be on Steam a lot of the time. But with the sales and all the different ways that you can buy things online for Steam, with getting the Steam codes, it's way more cost effective to just wait and pick your deals of the day when they pop up to build a collection of games or bits and pieces when you want them. But if you just want to buy it day one, you want to go in store and get it, and like there's still people still shop at those places.
Get your hard copy so you don't have to download 8 gig.
But I think people are starting to realize, like, it's still the market of, I think, of like kind of under 18s, like children and teens, that their parents still go to physical stores to do the shopping and everything, and so it's look, the game store, I want to get something for my PlayStation, that kind of thing is still drawing people in there, and that's keeping them afloat. All the kitsch sales that they sell.
Well, they're now selling a lot more toys than they are games.
So it's like the parent dollar, basically. Mm-hmm. Like the parents don't know about that they can get things cheaper, or that there are alternatives. They're not willing to think that hard about it. They just, that's what they want. Buy it. How much? Lay by.
That'll shut the little rat up.
Right.
That's right.
It's cool.
Oh, dear.
So, we don't know too much more about that, but really. But just, be warned.
Keep
an
eye
on it.
Yeah.
So does that mean that Battle.net and Origin are going to start charge GST as well?
It depends on the size. I mean, you would argue that if Steam are going to have to, then Origin and Uplay and Battle.net would have to. The question is, how far down does it go? How far does the ATO want to start kicking? See, I mean, I would argue the line might be drawn around GOG, say.
Yeah.
Because GOG are big, but they're not that big. But they're also headquartered in a European tax haven in Malta. So they're avoiding European tax as well as avoiding Australian tax. So
do you actually know if Steam is registered in the US or is it like Irish?
I don't know that.
That's
much.
Microsoft yeah. that do the to are registered out of Ireland.
Well, yeah, and Facebook and Instagram and
well, Apple
yeah. and yeah, everyone because their office for their privacy office is about two people big in Ireland.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh yeah, we'll just have all our data and data centers and business companies registered here so that no one ever fucking bothers us about yeah. it.
Ireland's method of taxing businesses is very low. Very low. So that what the way they work is that a little bit of something is better than nothing at all. So that's how they do it.
Yep.
So
it's a good race to the bottom.
That's our plan at the Eternal Beta Podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
So
we're a little bit of something good.
When we register something, we'll register it in Ireland.
No, do it in Malta. It's cheaper.
Okay.
Maybe. Speaking of racing to the bottom, also when I was at EB, I did see that the South Park game, Fractured Butthole, racing to the bottom. Thank you. Awards later. That's still not out.
Still not out. Delayed again for a second time and a non-permanent delay. Sorry, a permanent delay rather.
Yeah.
A non-specific delay. So
it was going to come out late last year, then early this year, and we're almost halfway through this year, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
You'd think it wouldn't take that long, essentially just being a new logic, a new plot to the same engine, but who knows.
It's a very sad episode, isn't it, so far? Lots of down.
It's just taking forever, and I mean, for what it was, it's quite a good experience.
Yeah.
Just seems to be being dragged out now.
This episode's like act two of like Star Wars, you know, where you have to have the sad part in the middle.
Yeah.
So look forward to the next
episode
where it picks up. Yeah, it's always the best one though, as Jeff just said.
So was there any reason given for the delay? Was it...
No, it's just being pushed back and pushed back, I think.
Yeah, well, look, the first one was delayed and they said we need to make it even crapper was their reasoning and... I think they did a good job at that.
Mm.
No, they actually turned out that they reworked the whole fight system, right? That's what they want. They were like, it's not fun. Like, we want to make it more fun. And arguably, it turned out to be quite fun.
It's quite fun,
yeah. Like, it's just a turn-based kind of, like, almost JRPG.
Yeah,
like,
it was just imagine Final Fantasy,
yeah.
early-style system, yeah.
But just in, yeah, with funny attacks and a few different variations and alternative things. Fireball. So yeah, that's pretty bit of a sad delay. We're gonna do some other gaming news quickly. So we had Total Biscuit coming out saying that he is not gonna cover Gearbox games. Did you guys hear about this this news article?
No, you did tell me, and I got bored about halfway through listening to it. So you'll have to explain it better.
Do you guys know who Total Biscuit is?
No, I do not.
Okay, interesting. He's a super, super popular YouTuber who has a very British accent.
Is he the one who's got cancer? Cancer?
Possibly. I don't actually know that about him. He's got a lot of sway in the YouTube world of the way – and he's very, you know, straightforward and to the point. He's kind of like a Ray Hadley or a kind of a, you know –
That's a bit rude.
I'm trying to, you know, give it some sort of context for you.
You assume you listen to Ray Hadley.
But he also, like, he does long videos. He's quite detailed and he's quite honest and he's very, like – I quite like him. I don't watch a lot of his stuff or anything, but, like – I've seen a few of his things, and as far as YouTubers go, he's not that annoying. But what he's doing is trying to stand up for something. So just on the topic of that, do you guys have an opinion on whether YouTube is – I mean, YouTube's all about opinion and about like putting
– It's definitely it's definitely something that early teenagers and 8 till sort of 12-year-olds seem to spend a lot of time watching gaming videos online and – For the life of me, I don't understand why they just don't play it. I think that was the point of that South Park episode.
I'm starting to understand it a little bit. And sometimes I feel too worn out to actually play a certain game, or I know I'm not going to be able to like slog through the whole thing, but I still kind of want to see what it's about. So
yeah, I think it's good to – I like it for if it's a review and I'm thinking about purchasing this game. I'm guessing that a lot of manufacturers out there, a lot of developers out there actually see it being – a way of influencing the younger generation. So, yes, so they do hold a lot of sway, I think.
Yeah, they definitely do hold a lot of sway. And I think that they should speak out about things. We saw last week there was a huge outcry about a bunch of big advertisers pulled their money out of YouTube because their videos were their ads were shown during videos to some people of terrorist group videos and stuff like that.
White supremacists.
Like, why is our ad being shown with these? We're pulling all our money, and like that had a massive impact on the earnings potentials for a lot of the YouTubers, and especially some of the smaller ones that only get additional income through their YouTube channels and stuff. If all of a sudden you start making next to nothing from it because there's no money in the pool, then why would you keep doing it? So there was a huge outcry of videos from that. Almost everyone did a video about it, and it was a big deal. I mean, obviously it's a bit of a bandwagon thing to do a video on too, so you got to do what everyone else is doing. Sorry, I'm getting to the point.
I'm glad you're getting to the point. Yeah.
Well.
So you're saying he's protesting because of something to do with G2A?
Yes, G2A or GTA as we like to call it on the podcast.
Well, see, I only just realised this is the EB podcast as well.
Yeah.
It is? You mean like...
As in EB Games. Like, isn't it a hilarious double entendre you snuck in
there? Oh, the EB Games podcast. Yeah. That's the EB.
It only took me like 10 months to figure out.
Yeah. No, that wasn't on purpose actually. When we were coming up with names like that, those words just kind of came out of one of the brainstorming sessions and
it stuck.
We used it, and then we realized later that it happened to mean
EB.
Or had shortened to EB, which is funny. Not that there isn't a retail store podcast. I don't know how that would go. Anyway, sorry. So the thing with GTA, G2A, GTA. I'm sorry. I'm just doing that for
Saints
the old
Row
school
2.
Fans.
Yep.
Is that they have some dodgy practices around having this extra shield protection. So basically because they sell keys and, you're not assured that they're going to work and you might get, reversed or...
charged back or something.
Charged back,
card.
Something like that. Yeah. Then if you buy this shield stuff, protection, they'll then cover you for another key kind of thing. But they don't do that by default. Like you have to pay additional, and then that's a subscription. So, like, it's locked, like, by default, that's the option. And you make a purchase on G2A for a certain thing. And if you're not careful, you can end up signing yourself up to $5 US a month, like, all of a sudden.
It's insane.
And Mike went on a huge rant about it. And they make it really hard to kind of quit it as well. Jump through all these hoops to like cancel it and get rid of this protection.
Just say unsubscribe. Just say no.
Just don't do it.
So something about like this Bulletstorm game is rattling people because they've made all these deals with G2A, offering these keys like with free protection and all that kind of stuff, and basically like trying to legitimize G2A a little bit.
Right.
And I think certain people in the industry are going like, this company is a key reseller that we don't like to start with. And, someone on YouTube is like standing up and saying and calling this out, it's not something we should be happy about that they're like, offering free protection and all this kind of stuff for their keys on there when this company's dodgy as fuck anyway. So...
I wonder where they're sourcing the keys from.
I think it's that people can sell. You can sell keys on there. It's a market.
Oh, okay. So it's like a...
eBay for
it's
keys.
eBay, yeah.
So there's lots of dodgy keys, but people buying key things in bulk, reselling them.
It's very dicey. Also, people pretending to be reviewers and getting keys sent to them.
Yeah.
And that was part of the Steam changes that are coming through now, is it's going to be easier to send keys out to reviewers, because previously it was people were just emailing the marketing people at whatever thing saying, I'm a reviewer, can I have 3 keys? And they would just send them out and they wouldn't know. And people give keys. I mean, streamers give keys away, that sort of thing. And so you can imagine that...
Yeah.
Once you get a key, I mean, that is worth money. That is worth actual money. You can see what that's worth as opposed to, say, getting a Counter-Strike skin, which is kind of worth money.
Yeah. So then what happened was Gearbox basically went, oh, shit, this is negative press big time and we don't want to be part of that. So they've now, stepped away from the deal. Like, they've been like, oh, G2A hasn't changed their behavior like they said they promised us they would, and blah blah blah, and retreat. We'll see what happens with that. I just thought that was
quite funny.
It was a big deal. Like, it was a lot of talk about it online, and but I mean, that's the the world that that's in the YouTube world. So there was that. Next is...
Do you want me to do esports in the news?
You can do esports in the news.
Or do you want... We've got little things to tie off. We'll do them
got
first.
Got heaps of little things to tie off.
Ukulele. I saw some ukulele earlier this week on streams.
Cool. That was way down the list, but...
Oh, yep. Okay. We'll tick it off now. So if... I mean, I've... Someone who's 100%ed both Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. It's Banjo-Kazooie. Yeah. The game is exactly the same. It's got this... You can tell it's got the same composer. You tell it's got the same people behind it because it looks and feels exactly the same.
So, yeah, I watched some video of it, and it looks really pretty. It looks fun.
It's lovely, like, yeah.
It's very, very charming. And have you seen Banjo-Kazooie?
No, I haven't actually. Now I really do.
Yeah, it was super Nintendo 64 friendly vibe, fun
kid
animal with another animal on its back. You could, like, use skills from both of them. And, yeah, lots of collectibles and 3D environment levels to fly around and land on and...
Mario 64, but a lot more complicated.
Yeah. Not that much more complicated, but just...
No, there's a lot more abilities and skills.
There was.
And puzzles.
And
types.
This is the argument I've seen put for this one, is that it's very simple and nothing, like, will kill you, really. Like, it's quite hard to actually be killed and there's just no challenge to it at all. And
mind you, the people who played Banjo-Kazooie are now in their late 20s, early 30s.
True.
So...
But...
Yeah, let's hope they're a bit better at platformers.
But it's not even at the level that, like, Banjo-Kazooie was, is what they're saying. Like, you'd think that knowing that people are older, you would make the game more complex and, like, interesting with different mechanics and stuff.
Well, you've already got the nostalgia dollars from them. You want to get the real dollars from the kiddies' parents, right? Isn't that how it works?
I guess so, but doesn't that come from the game being popular... overall, like, if the game is popular...
The game can be popular amongst kiddies and still ring the nostalgia dollar out.
But no, if it's popular amongst the adults, doesn't that make it popular amongst the kids? Or do you think there's no correlation there? Like, if the nostalgia dollars...
You're saying kids listen to Double J more than they listen to Triple J?
hopefully they listen to us, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Right. Kids.
That's so, right. Yeah, hello, young people.
Ukulele gets the thumbs down from TV Dave.
No, that's fine. I'm not going to buy it because I have 100%ed both Banjo games and 100% Conkers. I probably did.
Well, on the topic of, like, recently released PC games, you've got Destiny 2 confirmed for PC,
really?
Release. Awesome. Oh. So that's a pretty cool piece of news. Those Xbox gamers out there who really loved Destiny, which was Bungie's post-Halo game, MMO shooter, battle thing.
Thing.
RPG, without much RPG, and a little bit of... the guy from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's right. Tyrion really did a whole lot of voices, didn't he?
Dinklage. Peter Dinklage. Yeah.
I like it better when it's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to that because the Halo shooting was quite cool, like a good feel back in the day. And apparently the port to PC was not bad.
I think Halo 2 was on sale at EB if you wanted it.
I've got it.
Oh,
so we've even got the Xbox hooked up right here.
No, on PC, mate.
Oh,
not on
PC.
Xbox. No, we're talking about PC.
The physical
what are you
copy.
Talking about?
You can still only get the physical copy. That's the only way you can get it now.
Oh, really?
Right?
Yeah.
And then they've done like a Russian Halo 3 online thing recently that got shut down. So they made, like, you know, like a hacked version of Halo 3.
Oh, right. So
and then,
like,
they had servers up and all sorts of things.
A hacked port or something.
Yeah, a hacked port. And then, of course, it got shut down.
Yeah, of course.
That was a little while back. So, Dave, does gaming ruin your pro snooker career?
So this is esports in the news. So everyone get your violins out. This is great. This is an article I read this morning. So the title is Neil Robertson says video game addiction damaged snooker career. So I can hear your confusion already in the background, so let's keep reading.
It's very loud, the confusion.
Australia's former world snooker champion Neil Robertson says an addiction to video games across his career has harmed both his professional and personal life. Now, please stop crying. You are upset, I know. We have to hear the full story. The 35-year-old Melbournean says long-standing obsession with FIFA football games, World of Warcraft and League of Legends deprived him of sleep and adversely affected his performances. If you're a single guy and work in a normal job, you can get around it, Robertson told Eurosport. But you can't win professional snooker matches when you are tired.
It's very, it's a, you know.
Now, I'll just let everyone recover from their fits of laughter.
It's an athletic sport.
Well, snooker is pretty athletic.
Well, I mean, you think about how smoky the air is inside the dens of the snooker parlours. You know, you're inhaling that all the time.
I'm sure it takes practice.
Not since the
90s. If he's swapping.
Yeah, that's right.
If he's
swapping, WoW and League do take practice. That's right, yes.
And it does. And I'm sure that snooker does take practice as well. All I can say is turn off, you dickhead.
Well, actually, what he should have been doing is playing snooker games instead.
Or maybe soccer. Watching some snooker videos
maybe,
or something.
Maybe his pro football career will go much better.
That's right. Although, in an interesting side note, so their second part of esports in the news was this morning. So you guys are aware of, like, the Olympic Games, right? They're held in countries.
Oh, not the Sega game from, like,
No, not World Games, not Summer Games, not Winter Games. Not any
isn't
of those
that the event
titles.
That sends countries broke?
That's the one, yeah. They're really working hard not to hold it anymore. They're all trying to avoid it. Yeah. But normally you'll see, like, countries add in their own little sports so they can get golds in. So, like, Japan added baseball. I think we added softball or something like that. Or surfing we might have added.
Beach volleyball, I think it was.
Oh, was it beach volleyball? That's right. Yeah. Right. Good.
Arguably a good addition.
Yeah.
It was the one that was
very
sold
watchable.
Out. The first, like, it was actually sold out in, I think, the first week of the 2000 games.
Oh, wow. Mm. So the news is this morning is that in the 2022 Asian Games, so not any of the fancy pants games, but the Asian Games, there will be 3 medals available for esports.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's a big announcement, isn't it? So the announcement has been that there will be gold medal for FIFA 17, there will be gold medal for a MOBA, and there will be a gold medal for an RTA, a real-time action game, which is a real-time strategy game. So
right, okay, cool.
So they've announced FIFA, so that's fair enough. I mean, obviously everyone can follow FIFA and understand what that is.
Well, yeah, there was the news last few months where Chelsea signed a pro esports player to their team.
Yes, to work out strategy
like
and things.
As their official esports player.
Mm. Wow.
But, so they haven't named yet the MOBA and they haven't named the RTS yet. So, I mean, obviously there's licensing issues and there's advertising revenue to be argued about because obviously both League and Valve would really like to have their game there and would like to get a lot of advertising revenue from it as well.
You can almost think that they would actually be sort of crafting a game for it because it's going to get worldwide publicity.
Well, you can imagine. I mean, this is going to be in the Asian Games. There will be a Korean team, a Japanese team, a Chinese team, Australian team, say in theory.
Korea.
So you're saying that, like, Overwatch doesn't get a look in here?
No shooters. No, there was MOBA and RTS. They were the three and FIFA.
Maybe because it doesn't have local, local LAN options.
It's probably so harder.
South Korea versus North Korea in a real-time shooter.
Yeah, that'd go down well, except, obviously the packets from North Korea have to come via courier pigeon because there's no internet.
I wasn't, like, making a joke there. I was literally, like, I was taking a stab at the technology not being, like, it's an online-only shooter. You can't have that in a world game. Well, you've got to have, like, networked hardware locally to play.
Mind you, StarCraft 2 is online-only, so that's also dumb.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, so when they have the big tournaments and things, they're playing on the internet?
I think Blizzard put some servers locally for them.
Right, okay.
But I've seen issues where casters have dropped out and where observers have dropped out during matches due to lag or computers crashing or something.
That's
very
awesome.
Amusing.
Well, at least if everyone's in the same location physically, they're using the same hardware to connect, arguably
yeah,
that extra latency doesn't
too
really change much. But in a shooter, like, come on, in a shooter it's pretty important.
I'm just thinking of the political scenario for this, like Palestine v Israel in a shooter or a real-time strategy.
Yeah, there's no Counter-Strike.
This is not going to end well. Like, if Israel didn't win, I think those guys would probably get executed when they got it.
Right, right. The military context.
I remember a whole bunch of Israeli athletes got killed in Munich.
Yeah.
So this isn't.
Well, you would argue in theory that the Middle East at the moment is playing one really big game of armour. they're playing their big thing at the moment, but this is the Asian Games. So, luckily, we only have the Khmer Rouge and the Killing Fields.
It's Total Annihilation meets armour.
And
Supreme Commander, I mean.
Yeah, same thing, almost.
I was just thinking the Taiwan v. China
might not
go down too well.
It depends on how they're recognised, but, I mean, there are various ways that they do that. I mean, I think there's a Taiwanese AOE 2, Age of Empires 2 for you kiddies. There's a Taiwan team for there. There's probably lots of other guys. They still identify separately.
So when does this come in which tournament?
2022 Asian Games. So okay. it's still quite off. A way away. But the interesting question is what MOBA will get there, and you'd argue it's going to be a coin flip between League and Dota. It just probably depends on who's going to bring the most money to the table.
Well, it's clearly Dota has more money in the bank.
Yes, definitely.
But that could change, like in terms of like if LoL decided this was important and needed to monetize or
well,
somehow.
It's a big branding thing, and
they have more players, right? LoL.
Oh, I'm not sure.
It's in
to be honest,
millions, hundreds of millions.
Is it? Oh, wow.
Last time I checked, we did a thing. You should remember.
No, I don't. No, this is Dota. I don't care about Dota.
No.
And I only marginally care about LoL.
I'm talking about LoL. Oh.
I don't care about LoL.
Okay, so Riot said in 2013 the game had 12 million active daily players.
Daily? That's not
bad.
Yeah,
and 32 million active monthly. So I don't know where around 100 million from.
I only want to argue January 2014 when Evan's on.
Sorry, January 2014, game had 27 million active daily and 67 active monthly. 67 million active monthly. So basically LoL is killing the numbers you can see on Steam for Dota 2, which
gotcha.
Are around the million mark, I think. Or half a million to a million mark peak.
But that's not concurrent though.
This is saying... that's 12 million active daily. You're right.
Yeah, so, but you're looking at concurrent.
It's so hard to compare all these numbers.
But I only want to argue about MOBAs when Evan's on, so that's
okay,
fine.
Okay, fair enough. We'll leave that for
No, because you see, I wanted to talk about the RTSs. Now, okay. what RTS would you expect to see there? It starts
June
with S and ends in Craft 2.
June 2, Battle of Arrakis.
June 2000, mate. Oh. Battle for June. That one. You can actually select multiple units.
Yeah.
But, of course, everyone at home is shouting, it's StarCraft, you fool, StarCraft, StarCraft. And thank you for saying that because I agree entirely.
It's still far... as I said, it was kind of... StarCraft would be amazing, but it's still far enough away that I think that something else could crop up before then.
But again, it's a question of advertising and revenue. You want something which has got good name recognition amongst the kiddies, and you want something that everyone can get into. So if they, for argument's sake, we're going to play Age of Empires 3.
So, okay, yeah. Yeah, true.
And they're going to say, what's Age of Empires 3? No one plays that multiplayer.
No.
People are playing Age of Empires 2, but not even Age of Empires 3, or even worse, like Age of Mythology multiplayer, something like that.
Yeah. What about Command & Conquer Generals?
Yeah, no one plays that. Everyone's... No, it's like saying Command & Conquer 4.
Star Wars Galaxies.
That's still Age of Empires 2.
Fair enough.
But so the interesting thing is that... I mean, I don't want to go into the whole history between StarCraft Brood War and StarCraft 2, but Blizzard, Activision Blizzard, have now released StarCraft for free.
Yes, the original.
And
with
so now,
the good writing you were telling me.
Yes,
arguably
so
single-player writing.
Do you have to have StarCraft 2?
No, it's entirely free off your Battle.net account.
Wasn't that a different thing, though? They also put StarCraft in StarCraft 2?
So this is part of a hype. They're building up steam because StarCraft 2 as an esport is dying. There's too much of it. It's low quality. It's not a fun game to watch. So part of Activision Blizzard's goal is to try and bring back some of that audience. Like the Koreans love Brood War. They hate StarCraft 2. They're not watching it. So they're actually going back and actually going and playing Brood War again. So in order to bring that audience back into the fold, reward people who've brought StarCraft 2, they will re-release all of StarCraft Brood War's content into the StarCraft 2 engine.
Right. And do you think that will sway people and bring them across?
Yes. And it'd also make it easier for Blizzard to control because it's all control about property rights and advertising rights and that sort of thing.
Okay, yeah, cool.
And that was part of it back in the day. So we'll actually be able to, the Koreans will actually be able to go back and play StarCraft Brood War in a nice, pretty engine with all sorts of lovely observer features,
yep.
It'd be easier to cast.
Well, so what I wanted to know about this Olympic Games esports is – what about VR? Like, when are we going to have Tron? Like,
motorcycle races,
yeah,
you reckon?
Like, you know, we need some sort of VR kind of integration.
Again,
there.
It's got
and
to do with what people
will watch.
5 years
away is like a fair amount of time to be like, well, by then it'll be pretty commonplace if it's not becoming already to have like VR gaming experiences.
Well, you go up and start a PC bang in South Korea and get one with headsets going and see how you go.
Yeah. No.
No.
No, it's expensive.
So we've got a lot of things to get through and we've been kind of ambling through, but we're picking up the pace now.
Yep,
we're on our
right.
second beer. Bayonetta. Have you guys heard of Bayonetta? It was an action, quite a cool action
game. I'm aware of it, yeah.
With the female lead character who had awesome, like, sick hair and, like,
leather pants.
Leather pants and shit.
Is it all about
a bit
boobs?
Of that as well. But it was actually quite a revered, like, action game from a few years back. They put it out on PC and it's rumored to have sold over 100,000 copies in the like since its release date, which I think was only a week or so ago.
That seems low.
For a re-release of a game that was not really advertised, just kind of
it's a bad window to release it though because everyone of that audience will be playing Persona 5.
I think it's I'm trying to characterize it as a good number, 100,000 copies.
It seems
sold.
Low.
But it's not a new game and it's like it wasn't advertised at all. I think that's quite...
From what I can tell with Bayonetta, people would know. And I'd also argue they're busy playing Persona 5.
There's a lot of Persona 5 stuff going on. There's, it's interesting that. But I'd say that's pretty successful for a Sega re-release just out of the blue on PC, selling 100,000 copies in a week. So, I think that'd be good for like future. It was only last week. For future releases of Sega like games to be ported, if they're going to sell 100,000 copies, surely that's but just by doing a quick port, that's.
So you're saying there should be a SNES, not a SNES Mini. There is going to be a SNES Mini. You're saying there's a Sega Master System Mini coming out.
I just want more ports to PC done. And especially a lot of the older games that I'm more not just nostalgic for, but I think are actually good games that never got PC releases.
Yeah.
And if they're going to sell hundreds of thousands of copies, that's financially viable, or at least with advertising and with a bit of like penang about it. Like,
if they actually sort of did it as
panache,
like it was a,
I don't know what the word is,
they were actually regularly releasing them, I think it would benefit them massively.
Yeah. If you had like a lineup, like a retro release thing,
we're
like
releasing
one a
this
month,
in like,
you know, like it's still every 2 weeks.
Yeah, like or every, even if they said once a month or once every 2 months, bi-monthly releases.
Vote
of these
for
new
it.
Games.
Like, what do you want next? You know, like,
yeah,
and
we'll
just
do it.
Start,
we'll
like,
get it out there.
Bringing them out and doing a decent job of them. I mean, it's not just about putting them out, it's about making them work. Yeah. But I think that's kind of cool. So next on the list, 25 million copies of Witcher games sold.
Ooh.
Is that a big enough number for you, Dave?
That's fairly impressive.
Now, that'd be across the three games.
Have you guys
so divided by three.
Spent some time playing these? Or?
So I've played one three times about 2 or 3 hours in. And then I gave up about 2 or 3 hours in. I think one time maybe a bit longer. But it was a very hard game to play back in the day. It required a lot of patience and it's a very clunky kind of game, but cool story. Arguably the best story, the first one. The second one, much larger world, really cool, like, you know, experience, thrashed your PC really hard. I didn't really get into it until I think only late last year as I flicked this spider off my mic stand.
Oh, yeah, get that spider. You gained a level.
Yeah, get killed spider.
That's right.
Spiders killed one of 100. and it's an enthralling story as well. Super cool graphics, like, you know, just a very deep world of like Eastern European folklore. You know, like it's a really interesting kind of realm of a game. But the most interesting thing is the fact it's released by this like weird studio, you know, from Poland and has had major success. So 25 million copies for that, and the third one, arguably game of the year last year.
Bit of hype. Yeah.
Whether it is actually the game of like the best game of last year or not is to be debated. But
I'm gonna have to clean some stuff off my hard drive because I've actually bought it, but I haven't installed.
I've got it installed. I bought it and installed it, and I actually haven't played three.
It's You're a step ahead of me, damn you!
Yeah, but something we can ask Evan because he was playing it last I checked.
Nice.
So leave that for next week. But 25 million is quite a lot of numbers. Mad Catz, on the other hand, has not sold much and he's going bankrupt.
Rip Mad Catz.
Mad Catz, the peripheral. The peripheral makers, you may remember from going to someone else's house and having to use the Mad Catz controller because they only had one official controller for their device of choice.
But you had there was an auto fire button. There was always an auto fire button.
And it never worked.
Or it worked on one game. It didn't work on something else.
Yeah. And it worked in a way that ran you out of ammo. And then you were like, why don't I have any ammo? Because you were auto firing for 5 minutes. it's kind of sad, but they did do some high end peripherals too. A lot of the racing wheel stuff they did, and they did have a fair good run there, producing some
Xbox version one. I think the Mad Catz wheel was the one to have.
Yeah, so they pushed like the genre of peripherals like forward a lot, and made the official the first party kind of controllers and materials kind of like make sure they had something to compete with, so they were pushing the boundary a little bit. So for that, we thank you, Mad Catz. All right, well, that's kind of like the news segments. But Dave, Blizzard, you want to talk about Blizzard?
So we're just going to follow on from there and just give a quick recap of what actually is under Blizzard's hat, because I had to think about this for a little while and
it's quite a few things now.
Well, what have Activision actually been doing? And I kind of forgot that they were doing this little project called WoW.
That's one of their smaller titles.
Yeah.
They'd actually been busy working on that.
Just a few Koreans play it, that's about it.
Just a few. Yeah. Unlike that other game, StarCraft, which only a few Koreans play.
So World of Warcraft, it's gone on a bit of a slide, World of Warcraft.
People are still playing it. Legion, since the movie, yes indeed. I mean, Legion is the most recent expansion. People are still playing it.
That Legion drew people back like nothing else. It was supposedly back up to 10 million people again, active subscribers, which had dropped as low as 5.5. million?
Only 5.5.
Well, that's considerably low. A few other MMOs have, Guild Wars 2 and stuff have like numbers in that region, but it got as high as 13 million at one point a few years back, I think.
Back in the day when 10 maybe. Pandaria came out.
Mr. Pandaria, So around that era when it was like the kind of the glory day. What's the golden years? Like, kind of post the peak, but like, oh no, that kind of was the peak. But
well, Pandaria like, was over the hill though, surely.
Yeah, that was starting to get to, now we've just got everyone in there.
It was like the first and second DLC
started dying.
That first DLC that when that came out, that's when it went absolutely berserk. And then when the second patch came, when the second DLC came out, it just went, I think that was its peak. And I think it's kind of been riding there for quite a while. But the last few years, I think it's kind of died off a little.
So did you get involved in that back in the day at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I was absolutely hooked on it.
Oh, right. Okay. Tell
us. Because it was just prior to the first DLC coming out. I had a month.
That was the one that changed the landscape completely.
And added a whole new section, a whole new world. And you had, flying horses and things like that. So
was it your first, MMO experience?
It was. And I had a month off between jobs and I pretty much got up, played WoW, had dinner, played WoW, went to sleep, did that repeat 5 days a week pretty much.
Nice.
And when I leveled off it, whatever the maximum level was, when I leveled it off, the character off, I realized I didn't want to play it anymore, and then just quit and send everyone.
It does happen quickly like that.
Yeah,
that happened to me with Star Wars: The Old Republic, of which I was quite deep in for a while, and was playing it almost all the time. And I was studying, so I wasn't working all the time, and so those days were drifting by. And then one day I was just like, oh, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah, I just went, no more. And then I just got all of my stuff that was in my, I'd built up and all of the gems and all of the weapons and just gave them out to everyone in the guild.
In the guild, yep. Guild.
I just went, yep, I'm out. That's it, no more. And they were like, wow, really, man? Like, you've been on here, And I was like, yep, that's it, I'm done. I've had it. I got to the end.
You should all quit too. It's like leaving Facebook.
It was, and I never went back. And I fear that if I start up the WoW again, it's going to be one of those things where I'll be like itching to get home to play WoW.
That's how I feel about Facebook, funnily enough. Like, Facebook's the biggest MMO out there, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Like, not just the games, but you get this addiction to it where you think you have to be on it all the time and you gotta.
But you just have people you don't like on there, like your relatives.
Exactly.
And then you don't have to be there all the time.
They're like enemies, so.
Yeah,
they're like kind of level bosses that you got to bring down at some point in the future, but you can't get there yet. You're not high enough level.
There is a little bit of D3 in that as well. Like, when I'm playing D3, I kind of get flashbacks to WoW.
Yeah, Well, we're going to get to all of that, I think, shortly.
Well, I just want to give a quick broad overview because people think of Blizzard and go, what have they been doing?
Well, I don't think of them very often.
Well, no, because they're such a big company though. But, I mean, the games they've got are numbered on the fingers I'm showing in front of my hand right now.
Yeah, that's a weird hand.
They've got
seven
typing. So they've got WoW. They've got StarCraft 2. So StarCraft 2 is actually, you can actually play co-op and you can play all the arcade games for free. So if you can download the client right now, and I can drag you along in some co-op matches, which is almost the same as playing the single player, or you can play multiplayer versus AI or versus your mates. Because they want to try and get people in to buy it, basically, or get anyone playing it.
But why do you want to do this if you haven't done it before?
Because it's fun.
But, like, is it really fun to go back to a 1998?
No, sorry, this is StarCraft 2.
Oh, it's StarCraft 2, you can play for free.
Yeah, StarCraft 2, you can play for free. Modes. So, only, yeah, right. So you can play the co-op, you can play multiplayer, you can play arcade. You can't play solo and some of the other modes are restricted. StarCraft 1, you can play everything you like, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally played co-op with a mate. He did all the free play co-op content. He then went and bought the game and we did the rest of the co-op content. We still play co-op at the moment. It's fun. It's simple.
Yep.
40 minutes.
So do you think it's the best RTS that you can play at the moment?
No, I'm a Supreme Commander fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that another time.
So they've got StarCraft 2 there. They've got Hearthstone, which is the card game that exploded out of ridiculousness, out of nothing, which was...
It's kind of like a Magic clone.
It's a simplified Magic clone. It was a game that there was apparently in some of the pubs in WoW, you could go and play Hearthstone in WoW.
Yeah, that's right.
And so then they made it in an actual card game. Similar to Tabak in the Old Republic.
Yes, and also in The Witcher has its own one as well, which is becoming a game.
But I think the Hearthstone's kind of reached its peak and gone over, but it's still quite popular and still making money somehow. I don't know how, because it's a lot dumber than Magic. And it just shows you how incompetent the Wizards of the Coast are for not making a decent gathering card game.
Gwent is the Witcher
Gwent,
game.
Right. Yep. So there's Hearthstone. There's the other free-to-play one, Heroes of the Storm, which is their take on a MOBA, which is featuring heroes from StarCraft, from WoW, and from Diablo 3.
They're very incestuous. They're very Nintendo-like in that way, aren't they?
I think there was a bit of a fun mode. They want to say, let's make a MOBA. Who are we going to put in the MOBA? I know, we have all this IP that everyone loves. Okay, put it in there.
Yeah.
You can be Diablo against Rainer, against Prince What's-His-Name, who's the main Burning Crusade guy from WoW. Oh, I don't know. From Warcraft 3, Prince, bad guy, I'm good, and then I turn bad.
We know stuff on this podcast. So
it's Warcraft,
anyway,
whatever.
HOTS, another free-to-play. So they're going the MOBA. It got quite popular for a bit, but then people realised its flaws.
I don't think it was popular. I think the problem was it hung around in beta for too long, and then it actually went out to people.
But these Blizzard games, and there's more on the list, which we'll go over. But
there's only two.
They really appeal to a certain person, and that's a Blizzard fan, right? Like someone who's hooked on one of the games already, they're kind of sucked into this, their own client and therefore their own ecosystem. Uh-huh. And like you're really in that world. I just say that as someone who's not.
I don't care about that whole little thing. I mean, if you're a Diablo fan, you'll play Diablo 3. If you're a RTS fan or a StarCraft fan, you'll go and play StarCraft 2.
But they hooked all those on all those things. They hooked you on all those things before they had the client. Like before,
back in the late 90s.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So, but if you weren't hooked then, why, like, where would you, what would be your entry point? And arguably now it's Overwatch if you were part, you sucked into the campaign of advertising.
They allegedly make good games.
They do make good games, but yeah. I feel like being so separate to everyone else, and now that's less of an issue with Origin having its own store, and you've got GOG for old things, and you've got Uplay, and it's fragmented now. Fair enough, but yeah, for some reason, to me at least, and to like my community, my friends and kind of area, like it's only some of them, and you are one of the big ones, are like in that world. But I know that's not the case for everyone. Like apparently, everyone out there is playing Blizzard games, except me and my friends.
Well, it's just a matter of play the games you like. And I mean,
but I liked those games. I grew up with Warcraft. Like, I played Warcraft, the RTSs.
You didn't play StarCraft, though, did you?
I didn't play StarCraft.
Oh, so there you go. So that's why you're not playing StarCraft now.
That's right.
Man who doesn't like games continues to not like playing the games he doesn't like. I mean, it's a big shock.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, and people like Overwatch, and you mentioned Overwatch, and if you got a good memory, you'll remember that Overwatch was half of Blizzard's plan to replace World of Warcraft.
Yeah, that's right.
And that they were planning a tradey, questy thing that would be half of the day or half of the online day in your online RTS in your Mamorpaga, and that the other half of the Mamorpaga day would be your Overwatch shooting.
Yeah.
And the first part got trashed and they kept the shooting element, which eventually became Overwatch.
Yeah, the whole premise that it was mass online and you'd basically run around and sort of do some questing stuff, but then there was this world that you would sort of battle 5-on-5 and they never really got the mass part.
No, the RPG part got shelved, but they kept the shooting part.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And they ended up winning the misinformation war against Battleborn. That went really well.
Well, but didn't Battleborn bring that on themselves a little bit?
Yes, they definitely did.
I think they thought, oh, we'll try and compare ourselves to get on the hype train. And then it shot themselves in the foot because they're nothing like that
entirely
game.
Everyone
ended up
game.
Going like, what are you talking about? Your game's actually rubbish. Sorry, bye.
Yeah. Overwatch yes. turned out to be a really good, fun game. You can play it for as long as you want and you feel like even if you haven't played it for a couple of months, you can still jump back into it and it's still fun. But it's not one of those games that you have to play. Like you don't
have to play. Is it a cheap thrill, Jeff? Is it a cheap thrill? Like you jump in and you play and this is all great and pretty and flashy and then it doesn't really have that much depth.
I put it on the same level as Dirty Bomb in the fact that you can jump in, play the game, get out, go do something.
Yeah.
Whereas a D3 or a WoW, you really have to put the hours in. And
have they made it? Because everyone knows this, but I've only played the beta of it. We all played together at the time. Does it have a lot of strategy that like keeps you playing? Because that's been the biggest complaint I've heard, and I think the thing that turns me off about Overwatch is you can play a couple of rounds quickly and you can be like, oh, this is fun and I'm playing my character a certain way and blah, 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 and I'm using my skills. But in terms of coordinating your team and kind of it having a lot of depth to the actions and the activities in the game, it's not really there.
No, it's not at all. Like
it's all flash and no real...
You need to know the characters. You need to know how they play.
Yeah.
And you can sort of work out what the others are playing, but there's no real restriction on, you know, you don't have to play the character that way. You can just still turn it into a shooter and just run
and
shoot.
But you might be better using that character in the way they're intended. You'll have more impact on the game,
right? Oh, definitely.
But I'm getting at the meta of the, like, you know, kind of attack and defense stuff. Like it's...
I've played in it where we've all been on voice and been able to coordinate, and it's definitely a lot more fun.
Yeah.
But so is Dirty Bomb, is everything else that we play. But in the actual just sort of quick games that you can play, you can just play anything and just run around, shoot things, blow up, who cares?
And with a population size like that where it's supposedly, what, 3 to 7 billion people playing it or something like that, they claim. No, it's a lie.
Ceiling of 7 billion.
Maximum 7 billion.
When there's a small country playing...
That you would just get people, right, you know, being fucked and quitting games and doing games.
There's people in there that don't, like, you know, you'll have a five-a-side team and there's always one noob or someone being a total dick and not playing properly, so.
Yeah.
Hanzo Main, you're saying.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's a fun game. It's not something that I think that I particularly would say that I'm an enthusiast over.
I'm just trying to be devil's advocate and throw something interesting in the mix because I don't really like Blizzard that much and... I don't know why.
I've played every single Diablo, and I've never played StarCraft. I've always been a CNC fan.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
And you know, I did WoW for a while, but the rest don't interest me.
I think there's more to do with it. And I mean, the final game we've mentioned a couple of times is Diablo, and Diablo. Yes. They're up to Reaper of Souls now, and we will have a podcast where we delve into this a bit further because. Based on how well they're going in Diablo and in StarCraft 2, they've realized that microtransactions are the way forward. So they'll be releasing a new hero for Diablo 3 soon, second half of this year, third quarter, I think.
We know about that one.
Yeah, the Necromancer.
The Necro, that's right.
And that will be a paid edition, so you can buy the Necromancer. Same way in StarCraft 2, you can buy co-op commanders.
So do you think this will be an ongoing thing for them?
Well, the comparison is like back in the day when you had Lord of Destruction for Diablo 2. That gave you two new heroes, gave you the Druid and someone else. I forget.
It's too long ago.
Yeah, I know. It's far too long ago. Yep. Maybe I only just gave you the druid. But so I mean, normally that you would consider new heroes in Diablo to be part of an expansion pack, and it was odd. Oh, no, Reaper of Souls gave you the Crusader. Mm.
Cool. So anyway, we talked about all the games that there
so
are.
They're actually, Blizzard are actually doing games. They're just kind of quiet and off to the corner.
Yeah, yeah. Doing their own thing.
It's not. I'm hoping. I know the Necromancer's coming out for D3. Yay. But I'm hoping that there is actually another full-on expansion pack with you know, a whole bunch of new content, new quests to do, new ways of doing those quests. I'm hoping that sort of materializes sometime sort of early next year.
So cool. Good. Anyway,
all right,
what's next on the list, Steve?
Dirty Bomb, Jeff.
Yeah, Dirty Bomb. Oh, my God.
You hate it now.
Yeah.
Because last week I've got you on the – I listened to the episode today earlier and you were talking it up and you were saying it was great.
Yeah, I was really enjoying it. I was really enjoying it. And then I started noticing more and more hackers, almost to the point of where now it's almost unplayable.
There's hackers in there.
Well, the thing is, every match there's hackers in there now, and it's not that I don't class myself as the world's best player, but it's pretty obvious when you're watching these guys and they're doing like 41-1. And what turned it for me was that I was in a match and there were two guys on my team comparing setting notes for their aimbot.
Yeah,
like that's.
I came across a pair similar.
Yeah,
could have even been the same pair in playing in ranked.
Yeah, and this is not uncommon. They're pretty easy to find hackers because they're always using sniper rifles. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time, they're using a sniper rifle, and they will hang back and just pick you off.
And sometimes through walls.
Yeah, and like, through walls. Yeah. Or they know where you are constantly, even if you're kind of like, oh, I'm just waiting here, then suddenly they'll turn around and shoot you straight in the
head. I will say that I've played a couple of hundred hours of this game, and I know that there are good snipers who know where the points where people are going to walk out, and they know exactly what time they're going to walk out as well, because there is a visible timer, where the respawn timer in certain game modes that you can follow, right? So you can be like, right, our strategy is to move up to here at this time and then watch the clock, because about, you know, 7 seconds after the clock resets, they're going to walk straight out there, bang, they're down. So like you can see that good players know that stuff, but...
I understand that, but when you come from... when you attack them from the side and they immediately snap to your head and you're dead, that's a different story. Now, what got me curious about this was... for me, back in the day, you know, there was Call of Duty hacks out there and they were very hard to come by. They were usually kept pretty much on the lowdown. A lot of people had to be in clans or something like that or in hacking groups to get them. But now they're openly selling them for a measly $5 US via a PayPal transaction.
Wait, special investigation.
Yeah, you can just Google this. I highly everyone just... if you're sitting in front of your computer now, just Google in Dirty Bomb Hacks and you'll actually find
these sites. Don't, because you may succumb to the dark side.
Well, your metadata is also being tracked by the federal government.
That's right.
Okay, do it via a VPN then.
No, he will not be able to compete in the Olympics in 2027 when Dirty Bomb is the official game.
I somehow doubt that.
In VR.
For a measly $5, you can pick up a hack for Dirty Bomb. And a lot of these sites are now offering, like, if the hack doesn't work anymore or the developers have been able to catch it and stop it.
Which hopefully is quickly.
They will develop a new one and you can get it for free.
Oh, replace for free.
Yeah.
Jerry Harvey would be, like, happy about that. So it's a subscription model.
So what got me onto this then was like, well, if any pimply-faced teenager can spend $5 and get an aimbot, just to piss me off while I'm playing this game or trying to play this game. Do I really want to play it? And this is to the makers of Dirty Bomb. Get it under control because no one's going to want to play it.
Mm. Yeah, look, this isn't a new thing. I think you're just experiencing it more as you're pulling up the levels a bit and like playing more of it. Like it might have... like it's something that like the community as a whole like, you know, kind of knows... is happening a lot. It's frowned upon a lot in the competitive scene, as far as I'm aware. But I have felt exactly like what you're saying now echoes the way I was feeling after about a week of playing it too.
It was just out of control, and it wasn't. There was like I knew there was two guys on my team, but there was definitely another couple of people on other sides who were hacking. But it wasn't. in the sense that, like, me dying all the time actually kind of pushed me over the edge. Like, I don't really care if I'm, like, 2 and 25.
Yeah, yeah.
Big deal. Yeah. As long as I'm having fun.
Yeah, and you're playing the objective and getting, you know, your team's moving through the level.
Yeah, but nobody was. We were all basically just stuck at, you know, at spawn.
Yeah.
We'd run out and then just get whacked.
Yeah.
That was it.
And not in the, like, oh, we're fighting and can't get through way, just yeah, like everyone's just dropping dead kind of way.
Yeah, we're just basically popping our heads around the corner and we're dead and they're just camping it up and I was like, well, I'm out. See ya.
Yeah. So I'm reaching, like, the end of my tether for the similar reasons, is that I ran across the hackers as well had a few rounds of the one where I was on their team. And I heard the other guys were all complaining and blah on the other team. And I was like, what are they on about? And I was trying to watch these hacker dudes, like, and just somehow they surrendered the other team. So I didn't get much time to kind of analyze what was going on. Mm. Then I got rematched with them in the next ranked game about 10 minutes later. And they were like, hey, audio. And they were like talking to me. And I was just not responding because I was like, hey, these are the guys who, like, supposedly are hacking. And I was on their opposite team. And I was like to my team, hey, guys, like, let me know if you think these two guys are hacking because I ran across them before. And straight away, everyone was like, as soon as we started playing, they were like, oh, man, that was ridiculous, you know. And then talking in team chat, that's exactly what happened. So we started calling them out for it and, like, kind of giving them, like, a massive serve. But, you know, it doesn't really do anything.
But that's,
like,
what, that's the reaction that they want.
I know. But, like, the other thing we did, they were like, just surrender. We're just like, you know, I was like, no, I'm going to waste your time. So we wasted out the 15 minutes that they had to, like, well, it wasn't that long. It was like, you know, 8 or 9 minutes or something. I was like, no, we're not surrendering. We're just going to sit here and waste your time because you're wasting ours. And that was the best we could do. It was like that little mini lion meme where it's like, we could do is, like, sit there and take their hacks for as long as they to make it not interesting for them.
Mm.
That was the best I could do.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what the publishers do about it.
Yes.
Because it's one of the – it seems to be, like, the easiest game to hack.
Yeah. Look, the game's kind of like dying a slow death, which may as well just move on to something, like, it's got more hope in it at this point and come back to it if it does kind of clean its act up.
Anyway, they were very excited, thought the game was great.
Yeah.
It is actually great. It's good fun to play.
It is a really fun game.
Not doing it anymore. Game over, man.
Yeah. So we might drop Dirty Bomb for a while, I had to say it, but there's too many things out there, like PUBG or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which pretty much everyone in the world is playing. You're probably playing it right now while you're listening to the podcast, aren't you? You listener, you.
That's right. Check your inventory. There's someone behind you.
Oh, look out. To the left. East. 175.
Just watch out. So, there's a car coming. Better snipe the driver and then get in the seat and drive off.
So this is the Battle Royale game, which is taken the internet world by storm and is what's currently, like, the third or fourth most played game daily on Steam.
Oh, wow. That high.
Oh, yeah. It's up there. Like, it's. I'm going to check it now, right now. Well,
you see, my feeling is that it's like all these other games, like Dead by Daylight and like The Culling, and it's a flash in the pan. Unluckily for most people, I don't have a YouTube channel where I can't stream these games for you and give my Slenderman reaction.
Well, that's because of our internet speeds in the country. So,
and it's also because
C.1 of this podcast. Yeah.
I'm like the wailing banshee. You see my face and you'll turn away and run with fright. So I can't have a live YouTube channel or anything like that.
So the numbers, what do you want, like a concurrent or audience total?
How much are they playing now, given it's American really early morning
right now? All right, concurrent daily. It's actually quite a low point at the moment. It's 52,000 people online. The high point in the last 24 hours was 103,000.
That's not bad.
Concurrent. So that is... It's a fifth, like a quarter to a fifth of Dota.
Dota number one?
Dota is number one. Yeah, sorry, I'm looking at Steam Spy. I'm not actually looking on Steam because it gives a better breakdown of the things. But concurrent dailies, 100,000, was the peak one for the last few days. So that would have been midweek. So the new patch, that's why. So there was a big new patch for it. So it's an alpha. It's an early access game. So it's still quite raw. It's a bit rough. But I've been watching a bit of YouTube of it. A couple of our crew have gotten him on board and they're kind of kicking that off early days, subjecting themselves to the glitches, but apparently it's cleaning up quite well. So essentially it's a battle royale game where size of the arena shrinks over time, and you have to kind of move closer and closer to all the enemies until there's no enemies left. You can play it in a squad, you can play it solo.
The squad's a lot better apparently.
Squad is a lot better because it makes it more communal and it's more fun to play with people than just randomly. And also when you die, you're out. Like, you're out of the game.
Full stop, yeah, no respawns.
So getting shot, you'll knock you down, which means you can still move, you can still crawl, and you can still get revived, like you can get by your teammate or someone random. You just decides to kind of be on your side. Why they wouldn't just kill you, I don't know, because that's what they're going to have to do anyway. So I don't know. Is it something that interests you guys as a gameplay style?
It involves talking with people online, and I'm fundamentally against that.
I'd give it a go, but I don't know whether it doesn't sound sort of something that I'm that into.
It's your DayZ, your H1Z1, that's the kind of genesis of this game. Almost like GTA-like open world, kind of hunting people. With the shooter elements. Apparently the shooting's okay, not as refined as it could be. All sorts of weapons. So you've got to scavenge around for weapons and gear and stuff.
So you've actually got a scavenge type thing. You just parachute in.
Yeah, so you parachute into the area and
scavenge for your backpack, for your ammo, for your gun, blah, blah, blah.
For your healing packs, all that kind of stuff.
Find a car.
Okay, that sounds a bit interesting, a bit more interesting.
There's vehicles, it's a pretty sweet
How fast is the gameplay, is it? Like,
it's about half an hour, 40 minutes if you're get to the end.
Yeah.
So you got to remember, like this is what, 60-odd people in a map? Probably maybe a little bit less.
I think it's 100.
100 is it for this? I think H1Z1 might be 60-odd. Anyway, you start there, and I mean, obviously you start killing people, and as you say, once you're dead, you're dead. So if you're dead, you go start in your lobby.
Yeah.
But you get to a point where you're in a very small area with the other team who are heavily armed to the teeth like you are, and then you just duke it out to the end.
Yeah. It's mostly positive with 21,000 reviews. It's quite a lot of reviews. It's only been out since 24th of March. It's 21st of April today. So, yeah, a month in, doing 100,000 a day numbers.
It's pretty good.
Concurrent.
It's a lot of hype.
Yeah, it's a lot of hype. So, it's sustained is what I'm saying. Like, it started off, it kind of ramped up quite quickly with a couple of patches and then the hype started, and then now it's really kind of peaking. So, keep an eye out. Check it out. If you like it, you like it. You know, it's a bit early days now at the moment. It's probably still a bit glitchy, no shit, but early access. That's why I haven't bought it either, because, at the moment I think it's like $30, $40 or something, and it's like another early access title on the bundle.
Hooray.
Still waiting for some of those from 3 years ago to come through, so we'll see how we go.
To get a 1.0 like Dirty Bomb.
Yeah. So Civ 6, we're going to touch on that quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Dave have been playing a little bit of Civ 6.
So tell us about your religious victory, Steve.
Oh, yeah. So I was like, I don't know how to win religiously, and that's, a big thing in Civ 6. I'm going to give it a go. So I tried on a standard map with, I think 12 players or whatever.
Pretty big, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty big, and that was my downfall of that game, and failed miserably after easily converting the first three or so sieves. Then struggled to cross water with enough gusto to kind of wipe through a whole other continent. So after almost a whole game of that, a few hundred turns, started over, retired my sieve, came back as Rome. I forget who it was the first time. It was a smaller map. It was an 8-people map. And yeah, just from the get-go, just really pounded out as many sieves as I could, war with holy sites, and got my religion founded, chose some things that benefited building, purchasing with faith.
You pick your religion benefits.
Yeah, I wonder hoard a couple of the faith buildings as well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, got all that together and just really kind of pushed on. And then I thought I got stuck. I thought, fuck, I'm stuck here. I can only produce X amount of missionaries and apostles and so on, and inquisitors and all that kind of shit to fight the religious war with. And the other guys seem to be able to attack those guys, so I can't just move them freely through and go and convert all their cities, or they'd be converting them back.
Yep.
So I was like, oh shit, how am I going to do this? Then I thought, diplomatically, I'll just get a couple of them to attack the other ones and start a bit of a war and distract them. And it actually worked.
Nice.
I had a Germany between me and China, so I got them to attack each other. And while that was going on, I went off and converted somewhere else, and that slowed down their kind of ability to recover.
So you're actually able to bribe an AI to actually do something to help you?
Yeah, I was able to do that.
That's a shock.
I did notice some of the changes worth mentioning in the last patch was the warmonger penalties have been severely reduced, not severely, but lightly reduced over time. So if you fight a war at the beginning because you got attacked or someone threatened you or whatever, it's not so bad later in the game. Like, people get over it.
Holding it over your head.
Yeah, they don't hold it over your head for ages. It feels a little bit more balanced in that way. But there's still the weirdness of how they act towards you just because, oh, we like you because you've got a big army. We hate you because you helped a city-state. Yeah.
Well, makes no sense. Yeah.
Like, they have two things, and one of them you don't know at first. It's hidden agenda. The other one is their normal agenda. So, yeah, I don't know. I still haven't got to the level of caring what the other guys in my game are doing or
unless
who they are.
Unless there's a specific reason to it, you don't care.
But in the Faith game, I did leave the African guy. I don't know how his name off the top of my head.
The Congo.
Yeah, the Congo guy. Yeah. Who wants you to convert his you to his religion.
Oh,
I
right.
left his civ till last because I figured
he would be
if
the
I could
easy
get
one.
The others, I could get his. And it actually, I don't know if it helped or not, but I managed to do it. So, yeah. So that's what I did. What did you do?
So, I know that people are asking us about Civ 6 and we're kind of a bit, very middling on it. And I had a game which pretty much typifies why I'm so underwhelmed by this game.
Tell all.
So I did a 6-player map. I think so that means 3 or 4 religions, I think.
Yep.
I started off as India, which means one of my bonuses is I get all the benefits from any religion that's in my city. So I thought, great, I don't care about religion. Those guys can go off and do it all. They can all come to me and I'll profit. So out of my opponents, a couple of them did one city builds, a couple of them did slow expansions. One guy expanded a lot and just wrecked everyone else. Like, he was my main competitor. And he actually had a religion and went and wiped out all the other religions. And I kind of got about 3/4 through the game and I noticed that he was about to have a religious victory. And I'm like, okay, what do I do about this? Because I hadn't started a religion, there was literally nothing I could do to stop him from having a religious victory.
Yeah, that's true.
Except for declaring war on him and maintaining a state of war. Because if you maintain a state of war, you can kill all the religious conversion guys.
Yes, I discovered this.
Yeah. So I was in a really weird position in that there was a way for him to win that I literally couldn't stop.
But you could stop it. You just had to declare war.
I had to delay it. Luckily, my towns were the ones that were last to be converted. If they weren't, if I was converted first or second last, I couldn't really do anything.
You would have gotten benefits for being converted.
No, he had a shitty religion. It was really bad. Had no benefits whatsoever. It was really dumb. But
just like real religions.
That's right, exactly. So I was in the position where I had to basically keep at war with this guy till the end of the game. I actually declared peace once and he came in and converted one of my towns and I lost. And I was like, oh, okay, I have to keep on war with him the whole time. So I'm like, okay, there are a couple of cities near my border there. I'll take them over first. Let's go and crush this prick. Let's get rid of him. I hate him. So I take one city. This is a nice strategic city. Fine, I'm keeping that. Go and take another city. Boom, you have lost. I get the ending movie screen. I'm like, what? What happened there? I took a city and I lost? That doesn't seem right. Reload the save, take the city again. Ooh, I lost. Like, what's going on there? And it took me a little bit to figure out, but by taking that city, I pushed the majority of my civilians into that religion and then he won a religious victory because I took a city, even though I didn't get the chance to select to raise that city.
So it has to be you converted when it's 50% of your cities following that religion.
Oh, is it cities? Is it right?
So it's not necessarily population. The number of population. So I thought it was population. So for ages I was just trying to convert everyone in all the cities and get rid of the other religions so that I – well, and then I read the text clearly and I was like, hang on a second. All I've got to do is be the majority in all of this, in half of the cities.
of each civilization.
Of each civ, and that's a lot easier to do than being the majority in all the cities of a civ.
So I take it you don't get shotguns in this game?
No shotguns. Yeah. So that's the latest on Civ. So
I've got more to go.
Oh, there's still more. So you lost, though.
No. Well, so I had to figure out what I was going to do. Like, I had to actually focus on winning then. I said, okay, sure. I really have a time limit on this. I have to complete quickly. So I went and did my space victory. But whilst I was doing that, I'm going, okay, I literally have to defend my border. I can't take any more of his towns. I can't do anything offensive against this guy apart from shelling him and blocking him off options to his land.
Yeah.
So I start having fun doing that. And something I did read, but I didn't really, like, thought it was true. Didn't think it was going to happen. But the AI will build aircraft, but they don't actually use aircraft.
I've noticed that.
That seems really dumb. Like, the aircraft, will it be built and they'll sit there and they'll do nothing?
Yeah. And I wasn't sure if that was just me or if, but yeah.
That's been reported and that seems really dumb. So it's probably a bug. It's either a bug or something they didn't implement in time.
So essentially, for the non-Civ players who were thinking of picking up Civ 6, I don't know who you are, but it's not, like, it's really fun and it's really enjoyable, like Civ is, and, like, you know, watching it over time, you see it grow and making strategy decisions on a grand strategy stage, but then there's this point where you're just like, what have you done or not done here, where you should have programmed something a certain way and you haven't done it.
This seems intuitive and they haven't done it.
Yeah. So we're waiting. We're basically waiting. Just wait.
So even worse. So from that point then, I'm literally having fun shelling things. This is all I'm doing for the rest of the game. I'm teching to my victory and I'm shelling the crap out of his cities. I can't take any. So I get about three or four cities to a stage where they've got no health left, literally where you can walk anyone in and take that city. None of the other AIs, even the ones who hated that guy, would come in and take the city. And you're going, hang on, wait, why aren't you doing this? I'm basically opening the door for you. I've beaten the crap out of this guy. He's got no more army left. They wouldn't take it.
I would agree with you that none of the other civs seem to really notice what's going on in the game. Like, you're playing the game and you're changing it, but they're not reacting to you or to the other, like, they're kind of just happy-go-lucky kind of vibe. Like,
so they're still on their own agenda. They're not really sort of watching the, oh, wow, that guy's changed.
Yeah, they don't take opportunities. They're not opportunistic enough. Mm. Like, if, you know, like you say, they leave a city wide open, you think they'd go, oh, I'll be taking that one, you know, like jump in there, but no.
Well, literally, the guy has got no military power left. The city is in their land. Like, this guy expanded everywhere. The city's in their land. They should be taking it. They've actually expanded all around that city, so it's like a no-brainer. I'm against war with them, so they can become friends with me if they want to. I'm being pretty friendly all game. To top it off, right, the guy who I'm fighting against, he's got a capital near the sea, so I've sent some battleships around, so I'm shelling the crap out of it. You may have noticed some spies. Some spies have the ability called Inside Uprising that you've never actually seen used before.
No, never.
So the civilization has to build a housing district.
Yep, neighborhood.
Once they build a neighborhood district, once they build that, then you can send your spy in to incite a barbarian horde, basically, with a particular chance. So what I ended up doing was I shelled his capital down to no health. I then incited barbarians in the capital. The barbarians didn't take the city.
Right, either.
No, they just sat around and sat and watched
and
the city,
for things to fire,
which is really underwhelming, to be honest.
Yeah, there's a long way to go with that. Anyway, I'm sure we could sit here and nitpick all day and night about
that,
it.
That's not nitpicking. That's really bad.
No, it is. It is really bad. Like, there's a lot of edge cases. There's a lot of cases in the game that haven't been accounted for or are just lackluster in their execution. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on Civ. We'll keep playing it. Honestly, like, we're not going to stop. All right, a couple of quick little mentions to finish off. I played a lot more Assetto Corsa last Easter weekend and last night even, and been having a lot of fun with that racing sim. There are some criticisms out there of it, but it is on sale at the moment.
It's like my favourite game to play that I can't play properly.
Yeah, it's a very hard game where the AI is not where it should be, for example.
It's a hard game to play. Like, it's an amazing graphics. It does actually feel like you are racing a car.
I don't even feel like the graphics are that good. Like,
I think the graphics are pretty good, actually.
Maybe on our 1070 game and 1080 respectively,
I love it, but again, it's a hard game to play. Like, you just can't jump in there and expect to drive really well. Actually drive fast and drive well.
I saw a good analogy. It was like you started with Need for Speed when you were like a bit younger, and then you kind of were like, oh, I want something a bit more serious, and you end up with Gran Turismo, and then you kind of went from Gran Turismo to I don't know, something. And eventually you end up like at like the higher end kind of racing sims. Yeah, Project Cars is kind of like a, maybe a stepping stone onto Assetto. And then Assetto is kind of like trying to be a hardcore racing sim. You've got R Factor 2, which is kind of like the primo online only racing sim where a lot of the hardcore guys are. Assetto has been pulling them away for the most part. But they're, you know, amongst that community, there's a bit of argument over still some of the way the physics systems work in the game, and a particularly noteworthy response from one of the lead devs, which was quite on the nose and not a good way to react to your
your audience.
Your audience.
Yes.
I was going to say constituents. Is that a word?
Well, yeah, it is, yeah, the constituents.
Is it the right word?
Audience.
Audience.
Yeah. Paid audience, audience who are looking for you to provide feedback on a product they've bought for you and you want them to be happy about.
That's right. And you don't want to react like that to those people or anyone. So, yeah, not a good sign. But small dev team, pretty fucking good game for small dev team. It's like not a, it's not a bad game. It's just like really close to being like the most fantastic thing ever, but like a few things let it down.
It's just a hard game to play. Like the... Everything that I love about it is also some of the things that kind of sort of make it. Yeah. So everything that's hard make it real. That's the issue.
Yeah.
You can't turn them off.
You can make it easier. Like they're out there. Yeah. There's settings for.
But it takes away the fun. You may as well just be playing Need for Speed or something.
Yeah.
You don't want it. You want to sort of have all of that hardness in there.
It depends how drunk I am. Like if I'm actually really drunk, I will put the, like I'll put on gamer mode, which essentially traction control, stability control. I turn the racing line off because I hate that shit. Like I'd rather just choose the line myself.
Assisted braking?
Assisted braking, that kind of stuff. Like it's all in there. And it makes it kind of easier. There's just more fun to drive around, and it's still hard. You still can't get good times or win races or like...
You will be coming last.
You will be coming last. Besides the assists. But the assists, like making them stop to what the car actually is, because sometimes hardcore racer mode or whatever, it turns everything off and the car actually has that in real life. So it's kind of going a bit against the way the car should work. So... you got to be aware of some of that stuff, but you only really care once you're playing it enough and you're like, why is this so hard? So what are your thoughts on it recently? Have you?
Yeah, I've sort of jumped into it a couple of times and had a hell of a lot of fun, mainly in my favorite, the GT40, around some of the bigger sort of longer tracks.
It's a very fast car at top speed.
Fun car. It sounds real. It sounds like a GT40.
I'd argue the sounds in this game is one of my favorite things about it. They redid the sound engine a couple of patches back, you know, versions back. They're at version 1.13 now. And a few patches back, they put new sounds in and stuff. And like, fuck, it's like it's really cool.
It sounds legit.
I've even gotten like so... One cool thing to do is when you go to drive a car, just Google the Top Gear like segment on that car and just watch that like 5-minute little like video review of that car or whatever, especially the supercars. And then sit behind the wheel and like even listen to the sound comparison between like the actual car and like in the recording of the TV, the car in game, and it's fucking like it's awesome. They've actually recorded like everything, like the simulation in the truest sense. They've laser scanned all the tracks of these real-life tracks and everything, so you're getting every little bump and, you know, nook and cranny of them, which is fucking awesome. I've just been through the round of the careers, like the kind of novice. It's quite a long career mode. Takes you through all of the...
I still haven't finished the first one.
Yeah. Beginner... Oh, that on the tracks, there's like a three-wheeler thing you start off with. It's actually really hard because it's so slow. Anyway, go into manual. If you switch to manual, you'll get it.
Yeah, maybe. Honestly, it was just getting frustrating. I was like, I'm just going to just run some races.
I was there once. I was stuck and for months I could not beat that first race. And then one day I was like, all right, I'm going to sit here until the fucking done. And then switching to like driving the car manually and really like kind of pushing certain corners and accelerating out of them, especially. So what the game does is teach you good racing technique. You need to like, you don't know it until you've done it. And then, you feel when you're driving these, so I was on the Mercedes SLS AMG, which is a hectic car. And then the Ferrari Italia, was the next one up, the next level after that. And I just been through kind of like five or six races with each of those. And fuck me, that is like some fun driving experiences. You've got to have a wheel to play this game. Yeah. If you don't, maybe don't bother. Unless you really like races, then you probably do anyway. But your controller's okay, but it's all about first person.
You need a wheel.
In the cockpit.
You need like, a wheel.
Yeah, with a wheel. And it goes all the way up through all the different car ranges. One funny thing that I will mention, though, I did is I got in a Toyota AE86, which is a Corolla, and drove it around the Nordschleife, which is a 20-kilometer track in Germany. And the 20 kilometers takes you, 10 minutes quite when you're driving it quite fast in a Corolla. And the challenge was to get under 10. I think it was called under 9, but it was... 9 minutes 40 was the bronze tier. 9 minutes, 20 was the silver tier. And, this fucking track is a long... that's a long time for 40 one
Ks,
lap.
Yeah.
One lap, right? So you don't know how you're going. And the other thing is, it's fucking foggy. And, this car does not handle well. So there's periods of this track where you're actually... to the floor with the meter at 180k, that's the top speed it can fucking handle, and you just pegged the car and you're like, come on!
Start rocking backwards and forwards, yep.
7 minutes, but the other thing is, if you slip off the track once, that lap doesn't count.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I restarted about 20 times. The furthest I got was 7.5 minutes into the, 10 minutes-ish of the lap, and I was like, you are fucking joking. It was actually funny to me because I was like... You're kidding. I've got this far being careful but fast.
It takes years to learn that track. So
it's great though, taking all the all the different cars on that track because it's got such variety in the track itself. The other favorite one of mine is Spa, which
Spa is it's fairly simple but it's hard to get right.
Yeah. It's got a lot of straights on it. It's kind of an up and down, though. It's kind of on the side of a mountain or something, is it?
Yeah. You basically climb a mountain.
Yeah, you kind of climb out and then come back down it and then go back down and up again. It's pretty sweet. Taking some of the high-end things around that. Lastly,
Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, the VR game, 420. Today in Australia, in America.
Yeah, I'm getting it. Next week, I'm buying this. I'm going to check this out.
A suitable date for the VR release of Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
The big video game. What's the game itself?
I don't know. The actual sort of premise behind the game was kind of kept a little bit in the dark. All of the previews I saw of the game and stuff was basically... I'm guessing it's something like a Simpsons world where you kind of jump in and then you've got challenge after challenge, or you have to go and find items or find people or destroy something or get something.
Simpsons the arcade game or?
Simpsons Hit and Run, you mean.
Oh, yeah, Hit and Run.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Got to move around the world and the neighborhood.
It's what it seems like.
Kind of like South Park even.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so you got it?
No, I haven't got it yet, but it's on my to-do list for next week. I am going to buy it.
Yeah.
And then I'll be able to report back.
That'll be fucking awesome. Keen for that. Keen to actually play that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things that I'm going to be staying back at work, giving it a good sort of workout.
We really need to get Corey back on. Corey, if you're listening to this, come back on the podcast.
That's right.
And tell us about VR.
We'll beer you up and talk you out.
Yeah. My last one was Chivalry. Medieval Warfare was free the other week and a bunch of us picked it up. And so far, none of us have managed to play together, but a few of us have all played it separately. That's a hilarious game if you just want a bit of first-person slasher fun.
Oh, I missed out on it. I'm sad. I played it during the open beta, the free weekend, not the open beta.
Oh, you didn't get it? You didn't pick it up?
No, I missed it. I'm very sad. Because I actually like that game.
It goes for cheap pretty often. You should get it next time. I'll buy it for you. There's Chivalry Medieval Warfare, and then there's Chivalry Deadliest Warrior.
Oh, okay.
Which is like the TV show Deadliest Warrior.
Right,
yeah, and so you have the Japanese
ninja
shogun, kind of era fighters versus
Viking medieval knights, Eurabian, like
kind of similar, like we were saying recently about For Honor, which seems to have died in the ass quite quickly, just for the record.
It was the latest thing for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I just had that vibe about it of like it's really seems really popular because it's a Ubisoft game that got 6 out of 10, and it's, you know, like why are we talking about it? Because it's a Ubisoft game.
Yeah.
And apparently
I was pretty meh about it anyway.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was really excited about it. It was like, okay, the concept sounds cool, but isn't that what is already out in other games? So, yeah, look, it's time to wrap up on the Eternal Beta Podcast episode 31, I think. I think we've cranked, we're getting there to, I think we've been rolling since before we started recording. But it's, yeah, thanks for hanging in there with us.
It's a long episode. Thank you very much.
We'll see you on Discord and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Cool. See ya. Bye.
Cheers.
Baseline in I was going to, but I thought I'd just leave
drop
it.
Drop that bass.
Okay, let's begin.
Boop, boop, boop. Levels.
Levels.
It was quite good, actually.